You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. Finding safe, reliable, and affordable childcare was a challenge before the coronavirus pandemic. After the pandemic took hold, it became much more difficult for parents and childcare centers themselves. Many closed and didn't reopen. If they did, there weren't enough workers and it cost more. There are 126,000 fewer childcare workers today than before the pandemic began. What the pandemic also did was shine a light on how essential childcare is. One of the reasons many other workers haven't returned to their jobs or are looking for others is they can't find childcare. Childcare is part of President Joe Biden's budget bill. Will it be enough? Joining us today, Tracy Capanini, Deputy Secretary for the Office of Child Development and Early Learning with the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services, Diane Barber, Executive Director with the Pennsylvania Child Care Association, Ruby Martin is Chief Child and Youth Programs Officer with the YWCA in New York, and Kim Shear, Owner and Executive Director of Tender Years Incorporated, a multi-site family-owned business with centers in Camp Hill, Hershey, and Mechanicsburg. I want to welcome all of you to the program today. Tracy Capanini, let me start with you. And you all can weigh in on this, but some have said access to childcare and what it costs are factors keeping many people from returning to work, which is keeping the economy from fully recovering from the pandemic. Give us a sense of how significant of a challenge this is.
Well, good morning, Scott, and thank you for inviting us to talk about this really critical topic. As we have moved through the pandemic, we began utilizing the data that we have in our system to sort of track the impact and availability of provider opening and closing throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. And so certainly we have seen a decrease in the number of providers that we have statewide. And through our collaborative conversations with providers themselves and also the membership organizations such as PACA, they have really been highlighting the challenges that providers have been having related to staff recruitment. I think that it's not uncommon in the time that we're in here at the end of October 2021, that all workforce sectors are experiencing challenges enticing staff to come to work within their facilities. And then when you have the added challenge of having specialized qualifications or a workforce that currently does not have compensation that's on par with the requirements that are needed for that position, those things all come together to present a challenge for child carers as they're looking to bring staff on. So, Scott, we hear regularly that our providers are open and that they are willing to serve more children. However, in order for a child care to operate, they have to maintain compliance with Pennsylvania's child care regulations for ratios. And so they're not able to expand and enroll families that are looking for care because they don't have the staff to comply with those ratio requirements.
But the second part of my question, you know, the impact, you talked mostly about the impact on the child care centers themselves, but that the people are not returning to work. And one of the major reasons is that they can't find reliable, affordable child care. Do you see this having an impact on the economy being able to fully recover?
So it definitely is linked, and economics is not my forte. I am an early childhood human services specialist, but everything we're hearing link the childcare as a critical element of infrastructure to be able to afford families confidence in knowing that their children are safe and well cared for while they return to physical buildings. Or many companies have moved into telework, but they still have an expectation that their children or dependents have other care options for them to be able to telework from their home environments. And so even as businesses are rethinking their own models, childcare is still a critical element that needs to support Pennsylvania's workforce. Hmm.
Diane Barber, you're the executive director of the Pennsylvania Child Care Association. I'm going to ask our other three guests, including Diane, the same question. What are the challenges facing childcare centers right now?
Sure. Well, you know, Tracy brought it up. Staffing is probably, and staffing, maybe I don't even need to say, you know, staffing. This is a huge challenge. PACA is part of a statewide campaign called Start Strong PA. At the end of August, the beginning of September, we conducted a survey that was responded to by nearly 1,200 individuals. Based on that, 92% of our respondents indicated staff shortages. 51% had to close classrooms because they didn't have enough staff. Those programs alone had waiting lists for services of 25,000 children. In one program out in Pittsburgh, they had a waiting list of 160 children. And it's for those conditions that Trace responded to. We have very strict staff-child ratios, and if you can't have the staff, you can't have the kids. Now, if we look at why we're not attracting staff, you know, our average staff salary here in Pennsylvania is $10.69 an hour. Very challenging. PACA did a quick online survey the name of the survey is Where are you? Where are our childcare providers? And what we found is that while some remained in the field, obviously some have left, and the reasons they cited were wages, benefits, and schedule flexibility. So this is a huge challenge. We've always had an issue. I've been in the field for a long time. Staffing programs have been a challenge. We've never seen anything like this before. Never. We have a member in southeastern Pennsylvania that's offering a $2,000 sign-on bonus and is still struggling to find teachers to fill their positions. And it's not, I was recently asked, you know, can you say this is a city issue? Is this a suburban or rural issue? No, this is an issue throughout the Commonwealth. It's an issue throughout the country. But we feel it because we live it here. And what was interesting is that back in January of 2020, the governor's, the Keystone Economic Development Workforce Command Center issued a report. And at that time, before the pandemic had jumped off, they had said that the main barriers to employment for job seekers and employers, the two main, were childcare and transportation. So this is an issue that has just been exacerbated by COVID and by COVID. Well, just we blame everything on COVID, it's been exasperating.
I want to talk about COVID.
Can I interject really quickly?
Sure. And this is Ruby, by the way.
It's not just qualified staff that we can't find. We can't find any staff. I've talked to directors locally here in South Central Pennsylvania who haven't had an applicant in three or more weeks. I have one program director close by who's worked in the classroom, open to close for 3 months. So even if she got an applicant, she wouldn't be able to interview them because she's counting towards ratio. Right. So I think that there's some really big issues. And in addition to staffing, we have the trickle down of increased transportation costs. So we've cut the number of schools that we can provide before and after care for in half, which, you know, in a city like York really puts a detriment to families being able to find work in the districts that we can't serve. I really think there's additional equipment and supplies coming on time when you're expanding programs, another big issue. So there's many things affecting us right now.
Ruby, can I ask you what you pay your workers?
We just did an across the board increase. So we're kind of proud of that. Our minimum wage is $12 an hour.
Okay.
So I'm happy about that. But then we're paying our degreed staff with bachelor's degrees, $14 an hour, with master's degrees, $15.
Okay.
So we know we have a compression issue, right? So that's a goal for us, is to increase those wages. Of course, Pennsylvania Pre-K counts, where we have state funding, those teachers make significantly higher salaries with their degrees and their level one certifications.
Diane, Ruby just touched on this, but I was curious, what kind of education, what kind of training do these workers have? Or is required for them?
Sure. One of the interesting things is that PACA operates the Teach Early Childhood Scholarship Program in collaboration with the Office of Child Development and Early Learning with funding from them. That program supports child care teachers to go back to school to earn degrees and credentials. So depending on the position in a program, it could be a minimum in terms of work in a program, it could be a minimum of a high school diploma and experience. Probably the most flexible for us are folks with associate degrees. But as Ruby noted, we encourage our child care providers or teachers to achieve bachelor's and master's degrees. So these are folks that are highly educated and credentialed. And, you know, I think we all look and say, you know, if someone has put 4 years in to earn a bachelor's degree and still on average is earning on average now, you know, $10.69 an hour,
It's not going to happen. $10.69 an hour where you're paying student loans and everything else.
Right.
I mean, this was an issue before the pandemic, right?
That is correct. So this is just exasperated. The analogy that I get that I give is this. Working in childcare, while extremely rewarding, I mean, every day going in and seeing the social, emotional, and physical development of children and helping facilitate that growth is an amazing responsibility, but also, I mean, it's extremely rewarding. But it's a very emotional job. It's labor intensive job. At the end of the day, when you shut the door, you're still thinking about the children who were in your care. If you go and you're working at, you know, a retail establishment, and I won't name them, that are starting you at $15 to $17 an hour, you walk in, you turn some bottles straight, you know, at the end of the day, whether you dusted that bottle or whether you dusted that shelf or whether, you know, you opened a carton, doesn't matter, like, because you leave. It's not the same. And so that emotional connectiveness to what happens in our child care centers today is another, while is wonderful, is draining on staff, especially if you're making, you know, $10.69 an hour. Mm.
Kim Shear, the owner and executive director of Tender Years, what did you experience during the pandemic?
Good morning. Everything Ruby and Diane touched on is what we experienced. I mean, luckily at Tender Years, you know, we've been open the entire time during the pandemic. We received a waiver. Our key staff and most of our staff wanted to remain and work. We've been in business for 35 years, so a lot of our staff have been with us for a very long time. So we're very blessed and lucky in that sense. Everything Ruby said as far as, you know, getting people to come in the door and get them hired, we're in the process of expanding. So we're looking for 30 plus child care teachers for our new location. And that's been a real challenge. And Diane mentioning, you know, $10.69, we can't get anybody that's willing to work for that. Mm-hmm. And the people that are coming in our door and interviewing with us are requesting, you know, $15 and up. Especially if they have degrees and qualifications, and rightfully so. And that just leads into a whole nother issue of, you know, if we're paying our teachers more, then our tuition rates have to be more. And that's just a whole nother topic of affordability of childcare. So, you know, getting people in the door, being able to pay them reasonable wages that they're willing to work for, and being able to offer them good benefits, paid time off, retirement, things like that. Those are all things we're trying to offer to our employees. And I think that's really helped us during the pandemic to maintain and retain most of the employees that we've had throughout this time.
So we've established that you're really having a hard time attracting workers. I mean, that I can't overstate that enough, that you're really having a hard time. I mean, I had that figure in the introduction that there are 126,000 fewer childcare workers today than before the pandemic. As a percentage, that's 12% of the workers who were in the childcare industry when the pandemic began, compared to restaurants, for example, that have lost 8%. Now, that's not to say that restaurants, we all know they're having problems with shortages as well, but it's to make a comparison. 12% of child care centers have lost workers, have 12% less than before the pandemic began. But here's another big question. Mark, one of our listeners, says, I think the cost of child care can be challenging, if not prohibitive, for many parents, mostly because it has become commonplace to underemploy people. At the same time, my sense is that most child care workers are underemployed also relative to the important work that they do. I don't have any suggestions or solutions, just an observation. So, Tracy Capanini, let me start with that. You know, the point that he makes, I hear this often from parents, is that child care is expensive. We just talked about what workers are being paid. Why is it so expensive?
That is a great a question that a lot of people don't have the correlation between the high intensity of the labor required for childcare and the tuition rates that families are paying for that care. So as we talk about the various age groups of children, an infant toddler teacher or an infant teacher, our Pennsylvania licensing ratio was one adult to four children. And so when you think about the tuition that may be coming in for an infant level of care that is supporting a single staff person, as well as their benefits that that provider may be able to offer them, as well as sort of an allocation of all of the operational expenses that are associated with that center, most programs that I have heard from are operating at a loss when they serve infants, toddlers, and even in some areas, preschool children. And so we don't do a very good job of communicating how that tuition is going to support the overall operations of a childcare facility, especially for providers that are really striving to offer the highest quality services and are who are recruiting more qualified staff and who are supporting higher quality materials in the center. One of the things, and I think I probably would turn to the providers or to Diane to expand on this, is childcare is a market-driven business, and providers are very sensitive to the competition and how their tuition rates impact families interested in enrolling in their facility. And so we know, and I know this very clearly from work that we've done in Pennsylvania in partnership with the Penn State University, that the cost to actually provide childcare is significantly higher than the cost providers are charging their enrolled families. So I didn't know if Ruby or Diane would want to add on to that, but that's a good clarification.
Go ahead, Ruby.
Yeah, and when you added the important point about high quality, the true cost of care for our program and many like ours is probably four times the amount that we're charging families, because we have to, where I am, aligned with the state subsidy rates for childcare, because our families are almost all at that level of poverty that they're receiving substantial subsidies from the state. So what I consistently point out is the failed business model of trying to run a program, staying at that subsidy rate that the states provide, and still offer the highest quality of care possible. It doesn't work without supplements, right? You have to have additional money coming in to be able to do that. So, of course, we have a grant writer and, you know, other people working towards that. But it's still, I mean, to be able to make it sustainable year over year is always a challenge.
Ruby,
always.
What does high quality childcare look like as compared to less than high quality childcare?
It would blow your mind. There are really? So many different capacities. Right. There's a national accrediting agency. We have a local statewide STARS, Keystone STARS system. If you're working at a STAR 4, which is the highest possible STAR level you can achieve, and you're nationally accredited through the National Association for Education of Young Children, you have to have assessment processes, degreed staff, career pathways, additional, I mean, everything that you see teachers do in elementary schools that are receiving, you know, $70,000 a year to do their job, our teachers are doing. They're doing assessments, they're doing portfolios, they're doing conferences with families. They're offering the highest level of lesson planning aligned with PA standards. They're doing everything that teachers do, and they're getting, you know, $14 an hour to do it. And it's such a detriment. It's a disparity in our system of education.
We just got a headline in that is related to what we're talking about. The government just released a report this morning that says wages and salaries have jumped in the 3 months ending in September by the most on record going back 20 years. Now, that's good news, but it also makes hiring more difficult when you're paying $10.69 an hour. Kim Scheer, I want something that both you and Tracy said. You use the term tuition. Is there a difference between tuition and just paying a daycare center?
No, your tuition basically encompasses everything you're paying for to come to the center. Most centers will include various things in their tuition. Some centers include food, some don't. Some centers include formula diapers, some don't. But for the most part, your tuition is your payment to come and participate at that child care center.
Okay, so I want to make some, you know, distinctions here. Pre-K, preschool, and we'll be talking about what's in the federal government package that, you know, it's still being negotiated right now. But just to make some distinctions, Tracy, the difference between, like, I mean, pre-K and preschool and a child care center.
Scott, are you asking about in terms of funding or the differences in the services that they deliver?
The services.
Sure. So when we talk about the pre-kindergarten programs that are funded by the Commonwealth, there are two. The Head Start Supplemental Assistance Program, which expands a federal grantee who's receiving federal Head Start funds, and they're offering services that are aligned with the Head Start model. The other model is Pennsylvania Pre-K Counts, and that runs very similar to what we think of as a traditional school year, where a full-time program might run between 5 and 6 hours a day for 180 days a year. Right now, those slots that we fund are funded for $8,750, and I'm looking at Ruby to make sure that I have my statistics right, because I know she's a grant recipient.
You got it.
But the expectation in pre-K count is a certified early childhood teacher, and they have established some benchmarks for providers to strive for, where they're paying their teachers somewhere in the $30,000 to $35,000 range, based on the number of children that they are funded to serve. And so that's very different when you look at the information that Diane provided. And even, you know, Ruby was sharing that their rate to reimburse their staff or to pay their staff is higher than average, but even that's lower for a full 12 months of service than what we're modeling for a pre-kindergarten program for 9 months of service.
Diane, do children who are going to different kinds of child care, preschool, pre-K, are all children getting some form of education, or are there children that are going to, say, a daycare center, what used to be referred to? I don't know. Is it still referred to as a daycare center? Kim, I see you shaking your head.
No, we choose not to use that language. We're not caring for days.
All right, I saw you all shaking your heads like I said something bad. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dan.
So, you know, when we think it, okay, so there's education and learning, right? And so all children are learning, regardless of setting. And, you know, and in our settings, or some of our settings are, you know, have more enriched capabilities than others. And so some of that has to do with the resources that they have to do so. So when Trace is talking about, you know, our pre-K counts programs is a mixed delivery system. So what that means is that we have a number of different kinds of programs that provide pre-K counts. So childcare, high quality childcare, is one of the deliverers of that service, including, you know, intermediate unit schools, Head Start programs provide pre-K counts, and then private academic nursery schools that are able to fulfill the requirements of pre-K counts. So because pre-K counts is not universal, and we'll probably get to that later because that's the proposal on the table in DC right now, it is limited in terms of those programs that can access those dollars. So it's a competitive bidding process, and some programs choose to bid for that, but there's never enough money to do what we want to do, to supplement with kind of a pre-K counts add-on. So what I can't say is that our high quality childcare programs are not providing similar services to those that are receiving funding. So pre-K counts is more a funding mechanism than it is a determinator of quality. Okay, it is a high quality program, but there are lots of other, you know, high quality programs providing for children in preschool. I did want to mention, Scott, you know, when we talked, you talked about that headline that just appeared back at just the earlier part of this year, and it was kind of part of the assessment of the impact of COVID. The Office of Child Development and Early Learning commissioned a study from Penn State Harrisburg that indicated that the staffing costs in a typical program's budget was 80%. Of their budget. So if we think about the push to raise salaries, what impact that would have on the cost of childcare if 80% of your budget is already around staff wages and other compensation. So this again is one of those drivers of costs. And what we're kind of alluding to, but things have become more expensive, regardless of whether we're talking about going into, you know, Giant and picking up, you know, a jug of detergent, but we need that detergent in our childcare centers too. So those costs are rising too. Kim can talk about, you know, Kim is building a new center, and before we got on air, the supply chain is impacting her ability to get that program opened. You know, Ruby talked about, you know, the things that she needs for her high quality program. Are on back order because of the supply chain. So not to kind of, it's all connected to the economy, right?
Yes.
So
yeah.
Go ahead, Kim. Kim, I have to tell you, though, from a personal point of view, you know, I have these Zoom calls where I can see facial expressions and you nod your head and shake your head. And I know what you're thinking when you, when our other guests are talking, but go ahead. What did you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Diane said. I mean, Tender Years follows that 80% model. I mean, our directors have a budget that they have to follow, and their staff salaries have to fall within that parameter. And we're actually meeting all next week to discuss implementing a wage increase. And how are we coming up with that money? You know, if we're increasing all of our staff's wages, because they absolutely, like you said, deserve that and a gold medal. You know, where is that extra money coming from? And that ties into, you know, looking at the American Rescue Plan, the AARP grant money, and revisiting tuition rates and perhaps having a tuition increase in 6 months. You know, and there's also a lot of extra costs that have come because of the pandemic. I know we're all cleaning more and buying gloves and buying thermometer covers, and we have a Clorox 360 machine so we can spray classrooms, and having extra staff to run your door when you weren't letting parents in. So, you know, we just have a lot of additional costs on top of what our costs already were, on top of, you know, trying to increase our teachers' salaries. So, you know, it's got to come from somewhere. And I often think that, you know, the solution is revisiting that subsidy amount. I know, Ruby, you said that primarily a lot of the people you serve are subsidized families. At Tender Years, we're under 10% at all of our locations for the most part. And we don't collect the full tuition rate for right. those students that are coming. So any student that's subsidized in our program, the reality is that we're not receiving full tuition for them.
Right.
So we are actually losing money to have that child in our program. And I think that's a big part of the solution is increasing the amount that we're paying for those children. Another thing I think that would be a big part of the solution is revisiting family qualifications. Is that the right word? There's a salary cap that families must meet based on their family size to receive subsidy. And, you know, it's those parents that kind of are right on the cusp that are really hurting. You know, if you're not significantly below that poverty line, these middle-class families, you're paying $15,000 a year for each child to come to childcare. That's why they're not going back to work.
Right.
It doesn't pay to go to work and give your entire paycheck to your childcare center. So you might as well stay home, right? So that's why we're not seeing families go back to work, including our childcare providers. One of the things we've implemented at our centers is offering discounted or free childcare for our staff, because we have a lot of wonderful teachers and they can't afford to work for us and pay childcare or even have right. childcare.
Yeah.
So we've gotten a lot of staff by offering them free childcare. That's just one of the
I wonder if there'll
doing,
be more employers that
I do think revisiting subsidy is a big, big issue.
I wonder if more employers
can I,
will do that.
Can I weigh in here? And I know that I'm going to pass this off to Diane, so I'm just going to forewarn her.
No, I enjoy
prior
that the
to
four
COVID,
of you were having a conversation.
We
Go ahead.
Were beginning to make the case about how critical childcare was. And we do a really good job about talking about how critical it is to the development of young children, that from birth to the time that they transition into kindergarten is one of the times, I'm sorry, it is the most critical time for their growth and their brain development and the stimulation that they receive in a childcare or an other early learning environment really does help establish a strong foundation for them to move into school. So everybody is really focused on the benefits of early learning, regardless of what setting it's in. But people did not necessarily make the connection to how critical childcare is as infrastructure and why this is really an important topic to all of your listeners out there. I'll use the example that if you are in need of healthcare or if you are in need of getting your engine tuned up in your car, if your doctor or your mechanic can't get to work, you as a consumer in another sector don't have the ability to sort of get things done timely or get things done locally because of how critical childcare is to be able to support other people getting to work. In addition to the campaign, and that's where I was going to, Diane, just to talk about the Start Strong campaign. Pennsylvania also has an Early Learning Investment Commission, which is a governor-appointed board of business operators. And we're talking about insurers and bankers and manufacturers that really come together at the Early Learning Investment Commission to talk about priorities in the early learning space. For a really long time, they were focused on the expansion of pre-K counts or Head Start supplemental assistance or educating others in their business world or the legislators about the critical nature of child development. They are now pivoting their priorities and their understanding to understanding this issue around being able to support childcare as a sector to be able to be stable so that their employees can get there. So, Dane, I didn't know if you wanted to talk about the campaign and some of the educational things you guys do.
Sure. So this is a relatively new campaign. It's, you know, we've PACA, because our members are childcare providers, have always, you know, said, well, what about infants, toddlers, and preschoolers that are not in pre-K counts? So you know, when we're talking about childcare, and I think this is part of the start. This is part of Start Strong. We're not talking about custodial care. We're talking about enriched environments where children learn. We're not talking about, you know, Ditto sheets, you know, for preschoolers. We're not talking about coloring books. We're not talking about sitting kids in front of television sets. We're talking about providing opportunities for them to develop socially, emotionally, and physically. So it takes a lot of effort, and it takes an investment. And when we talk about younger children, we know we have to invest. We have to invest money, and that's what the campaign is looking at. The campaign is looking at expansion, especially starting with infants and toddlers, but also their teachers, and investing in their teachers and making it accessible and affordable to families.
This comes from Anna. All of you have discussed ratios, and I don't know who's in the best position to ask to answer this, maybe all four of you, but Anna asked, how do the staffing ratios in Pennsylvania compare with those in other states? Are other states experiencing the same degree of difficulty that Pennsylvania is? Would it be possible to relax the ratio slightly to provide some temporary relief? Who wants to take?
No.
Okay, Ruby. No.
So I think we need to be really clear that we're not in a position in Pennsylvania to lower our standards to make that a fix for this. Some states are. Some states are saying, hey, you know, maybe a 1-to-10 ratio for 2-year-olds is a good idea. No, that's compromising children's safety. So I think that we are in a good position here in Pennsylvania. As much as I'd like to see 1-to-8 for a 3-year-old and 1-to-3 for an infant, it's just not affordable. So I think we're already at the bare minimum for ratio that we can be and still offer high quality, in
just,
my opinion.
Just so we can clarify and then make this specific, what are the ratios in Pennsylvania?
I can go over that. And I wanted to add to what Ruby said too. I do participate in some forums for childcare owners across the country, and we are all experiencing the same issues with hiring. But ratios for infants in Pennsylvania are 1-to-4, for young toddlers 1-to-5, so that's 1-to-2, 2-to-3 older toddlers is 1-to-6, preschool pre-K 1-to-10, so that's 3-to-4, 4-to-5, and then 1-to-12 for kindergarten.
All right, let's.
And if you're licensed by Department of Education, that also changes.
Okay. The state of Pennsylvania is sitting on millions of dollars for centers. When will you disperse it? Deputy Secretary Capanini, this is a question from a listener.
Great. So we were able to issue on September 23rd the child care stabilization grants. The American Rescue Plan Act was divided into two significant parts to support child care. And so any eligible child care provider could go into an online grant system. And we do still find that there are some providers that don't know about this. So this is a great opportunity to share this information and make application to receive a grant that would be issued over 6 months. We have authorized, as of the end of the day yesterday, of the $655 million available in this pot, $442 million, and some providers are already receiving those payments. Additionally, we were really pleased to partner with PACA at their annual Early Childhood Summit. The second big bucket of funds is embedded in the more traditional activities that we support childcare in. And so effective January 1st, we will be increasing the Child Care Work subsidized child care payment. We will be restoring a incentive for providers who offer subsidized child care to families in the 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. time period. And then we will be adjusting Child Care Work's family co-pays to be less than 7% on a continuum to sort of support those working families. That 7% target aligns with what the federal administration has said that families should not pay in excess of 7% of their income. So we are really working around the American Rescue Plan to get those funds out. We had received several other stimulus investments that we really did get out to providers as quickly as possible. So beginning in last June, and then again in July, and then again in September, and then this past May, we issued stimulus payments to providers to help address some of those increased costs that both Ruby and Kim have talked about.
Okay. So Diane, let me ask about that. The $400 million that the Deputy Secretary just referred to, what will that money go to? You mentioned 80% goes to labor. What will that money that's coming from the state and eventually the federal, more money from the federal government, what would it go to?
Well, let's step back just a little bit. The $665, the stabilization dollars that are going out now, what we're hearing from providers is that many are using that to compensate staff. Unfortunately, this is one-time only funding. So to raise wages is extremely challenging. Although some have looked for ways that they can use this, these stabilization dollars to increase wages ongoing. But it is a challenge. So they are depending on bonuses and other kind of supplements.
The sustainability is definitely an issue.
Yeah, the sustainability is a big thing. Then the $400 million, I mean, where that really hits, what we'll be able to do with that and where it will hopefully begin to address staffing, the 80% staffing, is the increase in the subsidy payment. So what that could do is, because that is a payment that is not can be used in any way, it could be used to supplement staff salary, staff wages. Mm-hmm. Although at 60%, we're still below the recommended payment by the feds of 75% of the market. So it's still a challenge. And so what we're doing is we are looking forward to that $400 billion pot of money that we're talking about in the BBB, Build Back Better plan, for solutions, because there are pieces in that plan, as articulated, you know, as much as we can at this point, that talks about staff compensation. It talks about helping families. Again, the 7%, which is we're stepping forward here in Pennsylvania with these ARPA dollars to say no family eligible for subsidy will pay more than 7% of their annual income, regardless of the number of children they have in childcare. This is a good thing. And so this is, you know, so we're setting Pennsylvania up for that federal money to come down. But what that's not saying is that, you know, and I have to say this, is we've not seen a significant increase in state support in years towards childcare. While we have grown pre-K counts and the Head Start supplemental with state funds, we have not taken advantage, we have not done that. We can't say the same for childcare. And we have relied on the federal government funding to do any kind of increases that we've done increase.
Can I interrupt for just a second? Because we have a couple callers on hold. Let's get to Pat in Mount Joy. Pat, you're on Smart Talk.
Yes. Hello, Scott. Thank you for this amazing conversation. I am a school bus driver, and the company that I work for allows for mothers of preschool children to bring their kids on the bus, put them into car seats or whatever is necessary. And then as far as their schedule is concerned, you know, a school bus driving mom has the same schedule as her children who are in school. So they parallel one another, and they therefore are able to jump around or over this whole question of childcare, because as we're hearing, you know, the poor people, you know, they work just to pay for childcare, and this is a perfect arrangement for them. But it's interesting to watch. I am retired, so I don't have to worry about this. But the moms around me, this is their solution.
Hey, Pat, thank you very much. Pat, you know, I said earlier about telling a story. There's a good story, good example, and we'll get your response to that in just a moment. Let's go to Barbara in Harrisburg. Barbara, you're on Smart Talk.
Hi. Thanks, Scott. I'm wondering, I don't hear a lot of discussion about people who are staying out of the workforce and what is impacting them long term. I'm assuming, I'm making an assumption that most of the people who are making the decision now not to go to work because they'll need to use most of their salary for childcare are probably women. And for those folks, they're going to be out of the job market for about probably a good 4 to 5 years, which impacts their Social Security, it impacts their retirement, it impacts their seniority in an employment situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if the speakers do anything about letting people know the long-term consequences, not only because of the developmental issues for kids, but also for women, for staying out of the workforce and how that can impact them long-term.
Thank you for your call. That's a great question. And Ruby, I saw you shaking your head.
Yeah.
Actually,
I want to say that as much as we have so many parents on waiting lists right now, that I can't add another reason for them to be on my waiting list, because that's exactly what that would do. I mean, there's so many people waiting for care that can't get back into the workforce. And yes, the majority of them are women. So I think that if we're talking about solutions to this, Diane, I can't help but plug Teach a little bit more, because I think that when I'm trying to get staff so that I can get these people off the waiting list into my programs, I'm using the fact that Pennsylvania has this amazing scholarship program that participating programs can essentially all but 10% pay for education along with the Pennsylvania funding. We can pay for the education of our staff members. So part of my recruitment during this whole crisis has been, hey, I'll put you on a Teach scholarship. The other center might pay you $1.50 more an hour, but look, we can get you into a Teach program. We can get you your associate's degree, your bachelor's degree, and then maybe even get you into a master's program so that you have a career with us instead of just another job that you're going to jump through in the next 2 years. We really want to get dedicated people in the field that grow with an organization, and Teach really helps that to happen. So I just want to plug that as a solution when we're trying to solicit people into this field.
We have 2 minutes left in the program, and just a great conversation touched on a whole lot. Diane, I'm going to ask you your opinion on this. And again, I have to warn you, now I have 90 seconds left. What's the solution?
Oh, Scott,
I know.
I had the solution. So I think what we're talking about is we need combined investment. OK, so we need a commitment from the federal and the federal, state and families, parents. Everybody needs to work together. This is an essential service. It is the bedrock for everything that we do in the economy. If we do not have childcare, nobody can work. We talk about crisis. We can't continue to talk about crisis until we address the childcare crisis. So that's kind of my leaving. Not a solution, but we got to do it.
Hmm. I want to thank all four of you for being with us today. Kim Scheer, owner and executive director of Tender Years Incorporated. Ruby Martin, chief child and youth programs officer with YWCA in York. Diane Barber, executive director of the Pennsylvania Child Care Association. And Tracy Caminini, deputy secretary for the Office of Child Development and Early Learning with the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services. Thank all four of you for being with us today. And I think we learned a lot today. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.